the ruling was immediately binding on Costa Rica, but bureaucrats at the nation's Superior Notary Council have so far prevented marriage equality from starting.
We are excited to be welcoming the Beijing Queer Chorus to Portland, Oregon for a 10-day stay.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. New Zealand clears convictions for consensual gay sex, Costa Rican courts conflicted on marriage equality, and East meets West in queer musical collaboration. All that and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 7th, 2018. New Zealand lawmakers made it the latest country on the planet to expunge the convictions of men for consensual adult gay sex before those acts were decriminalized in 1986. Almost 1,000 men will have their criminal records cleared of three acts that were illegal at the time: sodomy, indecency between males, and hosting a place for homosexual acts. This week's vote in Parliament follows an official apology that lawmakers made for those convictions last July. Applauding the pardons, Justice Minister Andrew Little said that the latest action sends a clear signal that discrimination against gay people is no longer acceptable, and we are committed to putting right wrongs from the past. The UK, Canada, Germany, and some Australian states have also offered official apologies for similar convictions. German lawmakers additionally approved financial compensation to each man convicted under their since-repealed Nazi-era laws, the equivalent of about $3,700 US for each year he spent in prison. Some queer activists are calling for similar compensation for New Zealand victims. Veteran campaigner Bill Logan told the Guardian newspaper that people's lives have been wrecked by an injustice that was done to them by the law, and it is really the least they can expect to have some kind of recompense in their old age.
But the situation remains perilous for LGBT people in the Indonesian province of Aceh. Four more men were arrested this week on suspicion of having engaged in homosexual activity. Each faces up to 100 lashes in the public square. Much of the civilized world recoiled at pictures of similar canings being carried out against two young gay men last year. Global advocacy groups, including Human Rights Watch, have called such humiliating and painful punishment torture under international human rights law. While Indonesia is considered to be the largest Muslim-majority country on earth, its federal laws are secular in nature, and same-gender sex is not technically illegal, although social stigma hangs heavy over LGBTQ people, and nonconforming queers have been prosecuted under the country's strict anti-pornography laws. Aceh was given special permission by the federal government to follow strict Islamic law, or Sharia, and has criminalized and punished gay sex since 2014. Pushed by conservative politicians and religious leaders, Indonesia's parliament is currently debating revisions to the National Criminal Code that would outlaw all sex outside of heterosexual marriage, including same-gender and premarital sex. Aceh authorities said the latest arrests were made by religious vigilantes and police officials, who can invade workplaces and homes to search for suspected sex law violators at any time. Human Rights Watch called for the immediate release of the latest detainees, urging Aceh authorities to protect the public from marauding vigilantes who target vulnerable minorities.
Russia's state media regulator has blocked access to what is probably the country's most popular queer website, gay.ru, for violating a law that bans propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations. Citing a court ruling in Siberia that the site had violated the law, the agency ordered all internet service providers in Russia to block access to it, although it's still accessible from other countries. Gay.ru has been online for 20 years, offering support and national and international LGBTQ news. When the so-called No Promo Homo law was passed in 2013, the operators of the site were specifically told that they were not in violation. But anti-queer sentiment in Vladimir Putin's Russia has grown by leaps and bounds since then. A posting by the operators of gay.ru this week noted that the website has always been intended for persons over 18 years of age and was clearly labeled as such. They said they were considering an appeal of the Siberian court ruling that supported the shutdown and a challenge to the federal agency's blocking of the site in international courts if necessary. The Russian LGBT network condemned the censorship in a post translated by a site called The Russian Reader and reported by The Advocate, charging that, as is customary in cases concocted by the authorities, it is impossible to comprehend what exactly the court deemed promotion of homosexuality.
But another city in Japan has started to recognize same-gender unions. Fukuoka Mayor Suichiro Takashima handed certificates legally acknowledging their unions to five same-gender couples in a ceremony at City Hall on April 2nd. The registrations don't come close to providing all the rights of marriage, but they do offer couples equal access to housing and medical care in the city of about 1.5 million people. Fukuoka becomes the second and largest city and seventh municipality in Japan to recognize lesbian and gay couples. Tokyo's Shibuya Ward got the ball rolling in 2015. Setagaya Ward soon followed. Sapporo became the first city to offer queer relationship recognition, while the town of Takaratsuka in Hyogo Prefecture began issuing certificates to gay and lesbian couples last June. Japan's conservative government has resisted any effort to recognize same-gender couples at the federal level.
A legally married couple in Singapore is appealing the annulment of their marriage after one transitioned from male to female. The city state criminalizes same-gender sex and bans the civil marriages of gay and lesbian couples. Trans people in Singapore can only change their gender on government documents after undergoing reassignment surgery. Faith and Bryce Volta registered their marriage with civil authorities in 2015. Bryce identifies as female. At the time of their registration, Faith, who registered as male, promised not to transition, but only before the wedding. She had gender reassignment surgery in March 2016 and received a new national ID card soon thereafter. 6 months later, the Registry of Marriages revoked their license to wed because they had become a same-gender couple. The couple won their initial legal skirmish in the Singapore High Court in January when Justice Valerie Theon approved their application to challenge the registry's decision. A full judicial review that began last week is reportedly underway.
Local media were reporting since Election Day in Anchorage, Alaska, on Tuesday, April 3rd, that an effort to prevent trans people from using the public bathrooms of their choice appeared to have been narrowly defeated. The queer advocacy group, Fair Alaska, issued a press release on Friday, April 6th, declaring victory. Proposition 1 would have overturned a city ordinance guaranteeing trans people the right to use sex-segregated public facilities, such as bathrooms and locker rooms, that conform to their gender identity, and required them instead to use facilities based on their birth certificate gender. The Anti-Queer Alaska Family Council gathered enough signatures to force the measure onto the ballot. Their website contorts the issue of transgender rights to an anti-marriage equality rant, claiming, for example, that the unions of same-gender couples are harmful to the development of children. The Anchorage Daily News finally reported, late on April 6th, that the anti-trans proposal had been defeated by 6 percentage points. Among the more than 250 U.S. cities and 18 states with similar protections in place, Fair Alaska proudly noted that their queer electoral victory makes Anchorage the first American jurisdiction to uphold transgender protections on a standalone ballot measure.
And finally, the American Medical Association sent a blistering letter to U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis this week, challenging President Donald Trump's claim that transgender people should be barred from military service. A new study submitted to Mattis earlier this year contradicted a comprehensive review of the issue by the Pentagon during the Obama administration that cleared the way for the president to open service to qualified trans enlistees in 2016. The new Mattis study claims that trans people have high rates of mental health conditions such as anxiety, depression, and substance use disorders, and demonstrate extremely high rates of suicidal ideation and other comorbidities. The AMA letter said, in part, that the report to Mattis mischaracterized and rejected the wide body of peer-reviewed research and concluded that there is no medically valid reason, including a diagnosis of gender dysphoria, to exclude transgender individuals from military service. The letter, signed by AMA CEO James Madara, called Trump's claims about the exorbitant medical costs of caring for transgender service members negligible and compared them to a rounding error in the multi-billion dollar defense budget. Four different federal courts in different parts of the country have stopped the Trump administration from enacting the ban while its constitutionality is being challenged. Trans people continue to serve honorably in the U.S. Armed Forces, and the Pentagon continues to welcome new enlistments by qualified transgender personnel. As the AMA's Madara urged in his organization's letter to Mattis, faulty studies should not be used as a reason to deny patriotic Americans an opportunity to serve their country. We should be honoring their service.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending April 7th, 2018. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Sweeney.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
The Beijing Queer Chorus came into existence in 2008. They were the first gay chorus to emerge in China.
An ocean-spanning feature that combines queer arts and activism is a quintessentially This Way Out addition to our 30th anniversary month. But first, veteran queer journalist Rex Walkner's international reports were a key news source for This Way Out for many of our first 30 years. Now retired, Walkner has nonetheless been following Costa Rica's marriage equality battle and the recent presidential election there.
On January 9th, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ordered Costa Rica to let same-sex couples marry. The ruling was immediately binding on Costa Rica, but bureaucrats at the nation's Superior Notary Council have so far prevented marriage equality from starting. Meanwhile, six marriage equality cases are pending in the Constitutional Chamber of Costa Rica's Supreme Court of Justice, four of them filed since the Inter-American Court ruling. The cases include actions of unconstitutionality against the nation's family code, which prohibits marriage equality, as well as amparos, which are individuals' demands for protection from discriminatory government action. These amparos target the government for not complying with the Inter-American Court ruling. The Superior Notary Council for blocking couples' marriages after the Inter-American Court ruling, and the Constitutional Chamber Justices themselves for not having ruled on two older cases. Costa Rica's presidential election, held April 1st, morphed into a referendum on marriage equality after an evangelical Christian, Fabricio Alvarado, catapulted into first place in the first round, besting 12 other candidates, by making resistance to the Inter-American Court ruling the centerpiece of his campaign. Polls showed the runoff between the top two vote-getters to be too close to call, but on Election Day, marriage equality supporter Carlos Alvarado won, in a landslide, 61% to 39%. The Inter-American Court ruling is also binding legal precedent for 15 other countries without marriage equality: Barbados, Bolivia, Chile, Dominican Republic, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guatemala, Haiti, Honduras, Mexico, Nicaragua, Panama, Paraguay, Peru, and Suriname. In Mexico, marriage is a state, not a federal issue. About 40% of Mexican states have marriage equality so far. For This Way Out, I'm Rex Walkner.
And I'm Maria,
and together we're Zrazy.
And we're crazy about This Way Out.
Two queer choruses from very different worlds are finding harmony in life as well as in music with an exciting cultural exchange. This Way Out correspondent Steve Sims got backstage for an exclusive look at a song that stretches from Beijing, China to Portland, Oregon.
March was a monumental month for the Portland Gay Men's Chorus, and early on I set out to find more information about what was going to take place.
We are excited to be welcoming the Beijing Queer Chorus to Portland, Oregon for a 10-day stay with the chorus.
That's Rick Young, executive director of the Portland Gay Men's Chorus. He told me that it was going to be
10 days filled with a lot of interesting activities, concerts, programs, performances, and some fun, all wrapped into one fun time.
In addition to rehearsals,
we have a night where they're on the town going to the Armory to see the magic play, and we're taking a group of them to see the Portland Trailblazers and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
What makes this monumental for the Portland Gay Men's Chorus?
This is the first time that we've ever invited a foreign chorus to come. We have 23 members of the chorus coming, 19 singers, the conductor, accompanist, and two stage people.
I know of several international gay men's choruses, London, for example, but I didn't realize Beijing had one. And so I was wondering, how did it come about that we have Beijing coming to Portland?
Partly because I'm Chinese, and so that helps. I had an incentive. We got to see the Beijing Queer Chorus perform in Denver at Gala International. Gala International happens every 4 years, and 100-plus choruses from all over the world attend. This is the first time they'd ever been able to come. So they got to perform in front of choruses and audience members. But it was really a closed concert. So when I saw them, I fell in love with them. They have an amazing story. And I thought it would be really exciting and interesting for us to be able to bring something like that.
Here is the Beijing Queer Chorus performing across the wide Missouri during a rehearsal at Reed College before their performances with the Portland Gay Men's Chorus.
See you.
It was quite an amazing experience to be in the auditorium for that performance. And the audience consisted of the Portland Gay Men's Chorus, who were on hand for rehearsal as well. So I asked Rick to tell me more about the Beijing Queer Chorus.
The Beijing Queer Chorus came into existence in 2008. They were the first gay chorus to emerge in China. 2008 was a kind of a momentous year. It was a Beijing Olympic, and the LGBT Center there decided that it would be nice to have some kind of performing face. So they created the Beijing Queer Chorus. Initially, it was called the Shiny Jazzy Chorus. It was a great name, but it was an opportunity not to identify necessarily as a gay chorus. And when they first formed, many of its members were actually performing in masks to hide their identity from the public. But and it wasn't really meant because being gay is illegal. Being gay was decriminalized in 1997, and it was taken off the list of psychological disorders in 2002. But it was really more around the pressure of family to marry and have children. So the need to protect one's identity in kind of that society was really important.
Rick earlier gave us a couple of reasons why he wound up inviting the Beijing Queer Chorus to come to Portland. But there's also one last very good reason.
When it became obvious that we were going to be able to become the first gay chorus to tour and perform across the country of China, it was at Gala that we were informed that my idea of going to China was actually going to come to fruition. So it kind of worked out. And so then as we were laying out the tour, we were doing a concert called Pacific Voices, which was all about the music of the Pacific Rim. And it just seemed to me and seemed to the board and to our artistic director that it was a natural jump to say, you know, we should have a guest artist because we do bring in guest artists on a regular basis. Let's stretch. And let's see if we could invite the Beijing Queer Chorus. They were excited to be able to do it.
One thing that made this really possible for Portland Gay Men's Chorus to put together was something that they received last August.
Last August, we were informed we had won a $70,000 grant.
While the Portland Gay Men's Chorus is in China touring, they'll actually be on hand for a 30th anniversary.
So Portland Gay Men's Chorus came into existence in 1980. It's the fourth gay-identified chorus in the country. Its impetus was the assassination of Harvey Milk. That was the time when the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus performed in public for the first time on the steps of City Hall. So we, in August 30th, we will step onto a plane in Seattle, Washington, and we will fly to Beijing and land on August 31st. And on September 1st, we will step out onto the stage in some place in a concert hall in Beijing to perform. And we'll be performing in four cities. We'll be performing in Beijing, Xi'an, which is famous for the Terracotta Warriors. It's a historical city of major importance. And then we'll be in Shanghai. And then we will end our concert series in Suzhou, which is the Portland's sister city. And it's the 30th anniversary of the Portland-Suzhou Sister City Association Alliance, okay, which is the city that helped build the Lanzhou Gardens here in Portland. So they have a really important connection to the city.
One of the challenges for the Portland Gay Men's Chorus has been the many languages they'll be singing in this concert. In addition to an Aboriginal language, they'll be singing in Korean, Portuguese, Spanish, Hawaiian, and Mandarin. This iconic gay chorus song has been translated into Mandarin and will be sung by both groups during the concert.
The Portland Gay Men's Chorus has a signature piece called Never Ever. It came from a larger piece called Naked Man, which was commissioned back in the 90s, and it's iconic in the LGBT community. It's iconic in Gay Men's Chorus. And so Never Ever is kind of the signature piece, and we've had that actually translated into Mandarin. It will be performed by both groups together. The first time it's ever been performed, we think, in Mandarin.
Here now is the Beijing Queer Chorus and the Portland Gay Men's Chorus performing that in Mandarin at a rehearsal before the public performances.
Thank you.
Beijing Queer Chorus arrived in Portland on March 11th for their 10-day visit. The public performances were held on Saturday, March 17th, and a matinee on Sunday, March 18th. Governor Kate Brown and Portland City Commissioner Nick Fish were on hand for the Saturday event to welcome the Beijing Queer Chorus. Portland Gay Men's Chorus can now look forward to their trip to Beijing in August. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Our 30th anniversary celebration will continue with a two-part salute to some of our outstanding volunteer producers.
We set out on a year-long journey to learn about LGBTQ people around the world.
In the words of the great gay bard Walt Whitman, I am large, I contain multitudes.
Good game of science
Recollections and reflections on three decades of queer radio, next time on This Way Out. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Sarah Sweeney and Wenzel Jones, with thanks to Steve Pride, from Rex Walkner, and from Steve Sims. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Come by and join our 30th anniversary party at the all-new thiswayout.org, and remember us on Give Out Day, April 19th. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KFAR Knoxville, Tennessee, 2BLU Katoomba, New South Wales, WRUV Burlington, Vermont, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned, y'all.